This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 216, Red Reef Redemption. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday afternoon at the wonderful GamesAtWork.biz podcast with my fantastic, excited co-host, Michael Martin. Hey, Michael.
Hey there.
Well played, sir. Well played. So it's the week of All Hallows Eve or Halloween or Day of the Dead, whichever ones you choose to celebrate or enjoy. And I know we were successful in going out to dinner.
As you normally are.
Yeah. Did you have a good good Halloween?
Did anyone stop by your table at dinner and trick or treat?
I think the waiter said, "Here's the trick. Why don't you pay me with a treat?"
Oh, that's pretty clever.
No, actually they didn't. But that's
That's too bad. Because that would have been
funny. How about you? You have a good time?
We had a good time. We normally have lots of people at our house, but we're in a new neighborhood now and still finishing construction here. So the numbers that we have been enjoying for years past were down by a factor of about 100.
I was about to say. But, you know, it's a new neighborhood. People haven't established which houses to go to, right?
Have,
there's probably not a lot of people there.
It's been around since 2006. We're just in a new corner of it, so.
Yeah,
but that's all right. Well,
they'll learn.
They'll figure it out. They'll know where to come eventually. But boy, you know, so we have a show for you because this has not gone unnoticed that we've had other things going on and stuff happening. And we were looking at what all the things are to talk about. And there's like too much to talk about. So we have a very carefully curated edition of GamesAtWork.biz for you today. And I think you're going to like all of the AR and VR and all that kind of good fun stuff you're going to hear today. So let's get started with a
AR, VR, and PR.
Oh yeah, and robot R, or R for robot.
R.
Let's get started with a very interesting value proposition that comes from our friends over at Oculus, and they're actually quoting one of the co-founders there named Palmer Luckey, who said, "Free is not cheap enough for current VR tech." So we've been talking about this for a while. Many of the augmented reality and virtual reality headsets are still pretty dang pricey, or where they're not pricey, like Google Cardboard, are ones where you still have to have something hanging on in front of your face and is preventing you from interacting with the world. But I thought it was an extremely compelling thing to say, you know what? Free is not cheap enough to get the market penetration, understanding, and adoption to where people need to be and go from a VR and AR standpoint. And I was curious to know your thoughts on that notion.
Yeah, I've actually got two thoughts along that notion because I get what he's saying. And if you think about it, even if let's assume that the value is understood, and you start off with a free product. And I'll give you an example. Email, right? By the time Gmail came out as a free product, the value was understood, and it took a couple of years to really ramp up to the level where people used it at a dominant level. And the value capture by the enterprise, in this case Google, was in all the data that they could mine. I think what he's really saying in here is even if you didn't charge people for the headset,
right?
It is not clear yet for most people what the killer usage of VR is, right? And so you might have some great games, and I mean, I've played with some of them periodically in very simple headsets, right? And they're not sticky. because the experience of the game is not that far ahead of the other technology. And if you want mass adoption of a technology, you need to have a compelling value prop, regardless of the price. And so I think he uses the term free is not cheap enough to really kind of flip people on the head and say, what is the value you're trying to get with VR technology? And if you can quantify that in a meaningful way, mm-hmm. then the price isn't the point anyway. The price is not the point of adoption. And so if I could say, let's just pick something. Let's say that the real value prop in VR is you no longer have to travel to do vacation. I don't know if that's a good value prop, but let's say it is. And so today it might cost you thousands to tens of thousands of dollars for a real high quality multi-week vacation in a foreign location.
Yes.
So if that is a real value prop for VR, then you should be willing to pay for the technology necessary to do VR at some level equal to or slightly less than the cost to take that vacation. Right? That's how you kind of figure out the pricing. But the problem is right. people haven't defined a value prop yet that is compelling enough to say, I need to do VR for this. There are other alternative technologies. AR, as an example, is a great alternative technology because it does not cause some of the same side effects that certain people have with certain VR experiences. So that makes it more compelling. Headsets are getting better. I know I've done a lot of reading lately on reviews of Magic Leap's technology now that it's out there and they're doing the dev kits. And you and I are both on the mailing list. They're like, hey, dev, why don't you spend $100 a month instead of the big dollars up front and get the dev kit? But I have not.
Which is good.
Which is good. But why? What's the value prop?
You've already spent, you know, $600 that way too, right?
Yeah. And so I think this is just another way of saying identifying the right value prop for the technology is not completely there yet. Once it is, we'll see the technology take off.
So we're chicken and egging this, I think, in a big way. Are you coming forward with the idea that it's good to subsidize developers and rather than even making, you know, the development kit and environment and hardware free or even paid for to get development adoption on a particular platform? Maybe that's the way to go versus on the consumer side. Is that something you're kind of noodling on?
Well, what I'm thinking through is right now we have a couple of competing technologies. Mm-hmm. You've got VR, AR, or mixed reality, depending on how you describe it.
Sure. All and different kind platforms. Of,
regardless of the platforms, let's just purely talk technology for a second.
Sure.
At that level, they're still trying to find their value prop for mass adoption. I think both of them have very specific value props in specific industrial or enterprise use cases, whether that's, you know, we've talked about employee training, right? We've talked about maintenance augmentation to help a technician out in the field do a better job on dealing with an unfamiliar repair, right? Those are enterprise things. And even in enterprise, you know, $1,000 headset's not a big deal, right? In the grand scheme of things, because you can define a reasonable value prop and a payback period. When you're looking for mass adoption, which is the consumer side, the value prop is very different. It has to be compelling, engaging, and make people willing to part with their money.
but that's the killer app concept, right?
Right.
You need so when you're saying that you were reminding me of the 1990s flick Total Recall, which we've talked about before with Arnold Schwarzenegger and company, and the company in there called Recall. That's Recall with a K and two L's and a silent Q. And and that particular company trafficked in the notion of virtual reality actually, it wasn't even virtual reality. It was implanted memories.
Yep.
So it would implant in you the memory of a vacation you never actually had, and maybe have you as the action hero or super spy or whatever, as a killer app. And you can see where that might be a really amazingly interesting, intriguing killer app sort of thing. And you could do that not as implanting memories necessarily in the brain, but using a virtual reality or augmented reality or mixed reality notion to give you that same experience. That could be a killer app, very much like the Ghostbusters experience in New York City, or the one that's launching with Disney on the Star Wars experience too, that you're actually physically in the environment that's now being augmented around you. Right, that could be a killer app.
But the killer app there is an example of a game.
Right.
So is the killer apps, right? Experience, is VR an experiential platform? So it could be movies, it could be games, it could be education or training. Maybe. But is it so compelling that it's more compelling than what you can do today? And I think that's what they're trying to say. And your point on, does that mean in order to define the next killer app that makes it a compelling platform, I need to pay developers to engage there?
Right.
So think about that for a second. There have been examples in history in the near, like, last 20, 30 years, where large corporations have paid developers to develop things for their platform. Microsoft has done this multiple times, both with Windows 3.1, then with Windows NT, and even now with some of their more enterprise-type platforms. And as a developer, there's two benefits. One, you're getting funding to do the experiment that you need to do. And two, if your app is successful as a dominant platform like Windows, right, then you have a large set of customers that could consume your killer app. In AR, well, more so in VR, let's talk VR only for a second.
Right.
In VR, there's no dominant platform yet. So do we get each of the platform vendors, whether we're talking about HoloLens, Magic Leap, Oculus, let's just restrict it to those three,
sure.
Right?
Betamax.
Two out of three have large financial backing where they could pay developers.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure about Magic Leap. So the question becomes, do they have a large enough adjacent platform to then make those developers successful if they come up with a killer app? My thought would be, yes, on Microsoft because of Windows, which is ubiquitous as a desktop yep. operating system. Maybe on Facebook, because with Oculus, you don't necessarily go to Facebook for games or entertainment. It's more the social aspect. So maybe that's the angle. And people don't pay for Facebook, right?
Right.
So the thing there is, can you make a compelling enough offering as a developer to get people to pay you through Facebook for something, i.e. an Oculus game or an Oculus experience? Yet to be seen. You know you can make money with ads if you're Facebook. I don't know enough, and I don't know if you know enough about the financial models for companies that are building on top of the Facebook platform. And then Magic Leap being the third one, I don't think has a platform that's already established. So that's a big unknown. Nor does it have a business model already established for developers. So again, another unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost becomes Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo discussion, except all three of those, by the time they got to their next gen stuff, already had a a developer ecosystem below them. This is a tough problem, but it's interesting, and I think it's the right question that the guy from Oculus asked, right?
Yeah, when I saw this article, I thought immediately this would spur some intriguing conversation, because I don't know that there is one answer for it either. I don't know that the right answer is paying developers, but you know, that's kind of what companies do. They hire people and pay them to go do things. And the creation of really, did that happen? And the second element of the creation of the killer app is something that continues to be elusive, although there are some intriguing examples we will be talking about here momentarily. So let's forge on, shall we? Because we've got a few of those to get to. So the next one, Boy Genius Report had an article about Focal's AR eyewear. And these are starting to now look much more like a pair of air quotes normal style glasses. I mean, they're still bigger around the temples and the bridge to accommodate some battery and some other capabilities. And there is a projector to focus on the eyeball, some things that'll be superimposed on the world. But they blend a little bit more into the face as opposed to something like Glass from Google did, which was super obviously, hey, this is something that's special and different. You're recording me, right? Or specs, right? So other examples like that. Now, you had a point that, yeah, interesting glasses, but they still have a few drawbacks.
Yeah, I mean, here's a way back machine reference. Buddy Holly glasses.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
They're not quite those. And the model that they have in the picture associated with the article has really dark black hair, has a very thin, slender face. The hair comes down over the temples. They're tilted just right, so the camera that you're talking about is hidden in the shadow cast by the frame of the glasses. The temple and the arms of the glasses, while very thick, are kind of hidden under the hair. So all you really can focus on is the bottom of the lens and the top of the lens, and those look completely normal, right? Mm-hmm. So, as somebody with a wider head, they would be a bit obvious on me. I mean, there's I don't have, you know, a half an inch gap between my temples and my arms of my glasses. I have maybe an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch, depending on which part you're at. So they would kind of stick out funny, which then would mean to push out on my ears, and I have short hair, not long hair, right? So there's all those types of things. But what I found interesting is the point you were making on the difference between, you know, specs or Google Glass or those ones that are very obviously filming outward.
Right.
And I think as somebody until – back up. I think until such point that AR glasses are – an acceptable norm in a public environment, I would rather know that you're wearing them than not know. Right. And
ooh,
so
intriguing. Why? Yeah.
Well, because then I know there's a possibility you could be recording me. Just like in many states, you have what's called a double consent rule when it comes to recording a conversation.
Right.
Some states, you have a single consent rule, which says if I agree to record you, you're out of luck. So,
which is a good thing that we live in a state where we know we're both recording this and it's okay.
Yes. Well, you're recording it and I'm recording it. but the point is, in an environment where you don't know, and I mean, I know people who just do not want to be on camera.
No, so fair enough.
You got a camera pointing at them, that's actually an insult.
Two tests. For these particular glasses, there is no camera on them. So there's no facility to record video.
Yep. Which is good.
Which is a good thing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody who's viewing somebody wearing these glasses by, incidentally, they're a Canadian company called North, you know, so that's pretty cool, eh? And they're $999 US dollars. Which is kind of going back to our prior conversation too. So it could be that someone doesn't know that they don't have a camera to record things, because you can put a pinhole camera practically anywhere.
You can they probably pick up voice for commands. Yeah.
So test one. Well, no. I mean, we'll get here in a second, but the interface with a Ring that kind of goes along with it, mm-hmm, so you can interact, I think it's really also cool. But the other piece of the puzzle, so just to test the thought about knowing you're being recorded or not recorded, I am 100% with you on the video side, because the video has just that level of creepiness that caused all kinds of problems with Glass in the beginning. We won't go into that right now. But on audio recording, shoot, it's super easy right now for anybody to have a recorder going on their watch or in their pocket or anywhere else anytime.
Yep.
Anytime.
I agree. But my point was, I more actually video. Thought Google Glass,
right,
and specs, which are obvious, it's better that they're obvious because they are filming or can,
right,
film.
Or can film.
I agree and understand that these do not film, but as you say, we're a pinhole camera away from they can, right?
Right, and that other people will find value in that. If we go, you know, again, way back machine to the MIT experiment of the whole life blogging, mm-hmm, you know, that was part and parcel of, I never want to forget a face, and the reason why I never want to forget a face is because I'm recording every face I see.
Yep.
So, all right, I was testing that because that was intriguing. Now the Ring part I thought was pretty cool too, because it's one thing to show you some things on screen like wayfinding and directions or messages might be coming up or that's superimposed on the world in front of you. And you'd like to be able to move those out of the way or interact with them or do something with those messages, and without touching your temple or having some sort of joystick attached to your bridge of your glasses or something like that. I thought that the Ring was an intriguing way of allowing the wearer to have gestures to be able to interact with what they're seeing. I thought that was really pretty cool.
No, I like
and
that.
Maybe even having a button or something on there as well, you know?
Yeah. And I like that too. I know one of the holy grails of augmented reality is not and VR is to not have to have additional hardware to have interface control, right? Mm-hmm. Whether mm-hmm. that's through audio commands and control or through some outward downward facing camera or sensor that can pick up your hand movements. The Ring is a great stopgap for that. I mean, just looking at the shape of it, it almost looks like there's a little button on it, that I can just imagine being, similar to the, what was it called? On a ThinkPad keyboard, the little red eraser.
The TrackPoint.
TrackPoint. That's it. TrackPoint. It would be interesting to have that, because then you could have really much finer grain control. And it does look like there's a button. I don't know how the menu movement works. They talk about using it as a menu control. And one of the reasons I think that they can get this device to be as small as it is, right, is they talk about most of the horsepower is on your phone, right? It's a inward-facing sensor to your eyes to display the commands on the screen, and battery. That's it. And Bluetooth.
Yep.
But yeah, I do find this intriguing. I don't think it's as unintrusive for some head shapes as others. Pricing wise, doesn't seem to be too insane, considering that my glasses, when I get them, even if I get quote unquote cheap lenses, cheap frames, are still $600.
$700, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a 50% increase over that to add AR overlays.
Although it doesn't necessarily encompass the grinding of the lenses here too. It just says you can.
I thought it said they come with prescription and, oh yeah, it does not say that the lenses are included. It right. just says they have them. Yeah, that makes it probably much more expensive.
However, you know, now we're back to another topic that we've touched on before, and I just happened to come across a paper on this as well from NVIDIA about changing the focal length, right? Mm-hmm. of the what you're seeing so that your corrective lenses can be corrected by what it is that you see. Now, granted, that means you're seeing everything through the lens, if you will, which is almost like walking around blind without. Yeah, it's almost like a virtual reality experience with cameras, so that you're now experiencing every bit of reality, mixed reality, through the screens versus having them superimposed as an augmented reality. But I guess there's so many people these days that are walking around glued to their screens anyway. you know, what's the difference?
Right? No, they would never do that.
No. Especially not children. No.
Yes.
All right, so if we're trying to say having nothing between you and the things that you're observing, that would be a good thing. And that is the concept that Brett Jones, who's the co-founder of Lightform, to create mapping solutions to project augmented reality in the real world. So this is now a projector version of augmented reality. And I thought this was interesting and intriguing, and I've seen things like it before too. It's not all the way there, and the projector is not like on some kind of a drone that follows you around and projects things in front of you, which I guess would be an intriguing way to handle that. This is more of a static changing of some aspect of the world in front of you. That's the way I took it. Do you remember, Michael, this was some years ago now when I was still in Hungary, there were light shows that projected images on buildings that were set into music. So you would have a full audio visual experience. For example, on the main cathedral in downtown Budapest, they had an example of a gingerbread house superimposed on it, and you could see clockworks inside of it, and it would look like a dollhouse that would open up and you would see inside, but you're not really, because it's only projecting on the facade of the building. That's what this all reminded me of.
Yeah, I was trying to, and I hadn't had a chance to watch all the videos that were in the article. What I was really trying to get is how much different is this than just a high quality laser projection system, right? Scanning through one of the videos, they actually painted the wall in black and white, and then they showed the cool projected AR, as they call it, by changing colors in the spaces that were white, right? Yeah. Which just to me means they're looking at the wall that they're projecting on. They're seeing the area that is painted in such a manner that that's where they should focus their display. And they're ignoring the other part, which is, for lack of a better term in my mind, laser projection without lasers, right? So I didn't really get the real value of this. I get the stuff because I remember you know posting some videos of some of the really neat stuff in Budapest that were showing off these really intricate light shows on side of buildings. But I don't know if I really can call these examples that I'm seeing in this article AR, other than they're, you know, showing different light effects on one part of a larger canvas.
Right. On a surface.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's why I'm not as excited as I want to be.
Yeah. I get you. And I think I feel the same way. We've seen some other holographic projection systems over the years that maybe approach the AR element a little bit more. And this is maybe a bit less so. But it has some related characteristics, and I will have to dig up my video. I know I've got it somewhere. I may have uploaded it to YouTube, and if I have, then I will upload it here as well. So it was intriguing to me anyway, because I just what can be done that way, and for people to experience something like a building opening up, and this particular, you know, holiday gingerbread house type of experience was really pretty fun and pretty cool.
Well, the example that they show with the stormtrooper helmet, that is interesting. And again, I think it's just really focused light capabilities, based off of the helmet, because they're showing like different type of glow of the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming from the outside, not from the inside, right? So
right, because it's projected by the projector itself, right?
Yeah. But it's still some cool effects, right? Don't get me wrong. I like the effects. I'm trying to. To me, it's not augmented reality. It's enhanced reality.
Yeah, the whole M in mixed reality is looming large, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's move briefly to the Walmart example from an AR app that exists on iOS that you can use to look at the pricing of various items in their stores. This seemed like an intriguing way of leveraging AR and allowing the consumer to get more information about a particular thing that they see on the shelf, keep them in the store, and maybe give them the good feeling that you want to as a retailer, that they're getting a good deal. And if they want something related to it, that you'll help them find it.
Yeah. What I liked about this one is the anchoring. So basically you're in the grocery store and you're trying to compare a couple of different products. So you use the AR scanner to basically scan the barcode on those devices on the shelf and tap it. And that puts a little dot that says I'm anchoring to that data point. And you do this on three or four items on a shelf. And once you've anchored them, you can literally just scan back and forth, and it provides you more insight on those products. So you can quickly say, what's the nutritional content comparison between this bag of rice and that bag of microwave rice, right?
Right.
So it gives you that ability to anchor data points and then have the augmented reality overlay that provides you more insight so you can compare a product. That's kind of cool. I like this example. It made sense.
I thought I did too, and I think for people with various disabilities, so that you might not be tall enough to reach the shelf, or you have visual challenges that you can't quite read the small print on a label, things like this could do a lot for you. Or maybe it's a language thing where you're like, I don't know exactly what it is that I'm buying, but it can translate for you.
It looks like a banana, but it could be a plantain.
It's listed as something different. But what if you had a plantain that was trying to masquerade as a banana? Wouldn't it be interesting to know that it was a plantain, not a banana?
Oh, if only there was some way to do virtual product verification or even, you know, counterfeit detection.
Yeah, exactly. So this is another thing that we saw right as we were getting the show started here about an augmented reality app that does counterfeit detection based upon a variety of characteristics that you might know about what the authentic thing is. And what an intriguing use case for augmented reality on a mobile platform.
I think this is really, really cool. And as you and I talked about before the show, I mean, a lot of these components are things that are in my domain in my day job. Yep. And I won't go detail into that other than to say, you know, the ability to do real-time visual analytics and detection is moving so fast and becoming so powerful over the last few years. It's really, really exciting. And then you tie that into, say, a supply chain or some other indelible record to track it. An object over time to you know, validate against counterfeit detection. This is cool. I like it.
Yeah, I just the use cases for customs and border enforcement of things, for like you said, supply chain, you know, spot checks, for discovery easily in various places in the world where you can be pretty unobtrusive if you're just using your phone. Could be really, really cool.
So just imagine, we started this kind of this section of the show talking about how do we get there if we can't define a value prop. And as we've gone further into the show, we're showing more and more things that actually have very specific value props. and they're in the same, you know, AR, VR spaces. So the technology is there, the platform. We don't know which one wins, but the value props are really starting to show, and I'm excited by them.
You know, I am too. And now that you mention that, Michael, it's to me, the value prop is being exposed, and it's being exposed without having to wear glasses or a headset or other things. That these use cases make a lot of sense to be able to look through a handheld screen.
Yep.
And then do something with it. You don't necessarily have to have something in front or on your head to be able to interact this way.
Exactly.
I have to file that away and think about that some more. time is growing short, so we've got, I would say, at least two more things that we need to talk about today. But we had so many cool things because we haven't talked in a week. Actually, a little bit longer.
2 weeks.
The larval bot. Let's go there because we haven't had robotics yet. You saw this, and this was a little scary to me to begin with, but I thought it was cool in the end.
Yeah, I lived for 6+ months in Hawaii many years ago, and one of my favorite things to do was to go snorkeling on reefs and just look at the coral. And with climate change and other things going on, many of the reefs are in danger. And just having the ability to kind of rejuvenate a reef, historically, divers do this manually, right? They go down on the reef and they try to seed, for lack of a better term, spreading larval across a reef in order to get coral and things to reestablish, connect, and start growing and keeping the reef healthy. And that's very manually intensive, and you know, it's hard to do and error prone and all those other things that you really need a bot to do it. And so there's a group of scientists that have created a bot to do this. And I remember a couple of years you and I talking about the work that iRobot was doing with their marine division.
Right.
And you know, mini submarines that were doing cool stuff. I didn't remember the name of the manufacturer that they're using, but it's not the iRobot one from what I can tell. And what they have is these bots that will carry about a quarter of a million to over a million of these larvae and spray them over a reef in a very controlled and appropriate manner in order to try to reestablish and rejuvenate a reef. I think this is really cool. The video is kind of cool. But in general, this is the neat stuff that can be possible when you start automating certain technologies in support of larger issues like reef depletion.
And you're exactly right. The whole point of having the camera, the right level dispersion, the optimization of the depth and the angle to increase the likelihood that the seeding actually takes is something that is much more easily controlled with a bot than with a diver. And if this is something that will help maintain the reefs around the world, you know, I'm like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So really, really cool.
That's getting things to grow and live.
Yeah. So the last one is about things not living so well. And it was, it's about a game that I don't personally play, but it was, in the news quite a bit here recently. Red Dead Redemption 2. Has just come out, so it's gotten a lot of focus. And like any virtual world that is so wide and that you're able to play really anywhere and to do much of anything, you can follow the storyline or you can just go explore. You'll find glitches here and there, and this one was just intriguing to me because the horses, which people ride in this Western American kind of setting, were catching on fire. And and I don't know about you, Michael, but I didn't think horses burn all that well. But, you know, in a game world with game physics, you could probably make really much anything burn. And some of the game players actually happen to find the particular place in the world where if a horse is there, whether it's a non-player character or not, I guess, they spontaneously combust.
Yes, it's like a drummer in Spinal Tap.
Just like the drummer in Spinal Tap.
Yeah, so this is so bizarre. And you know, I was a big fan of Skyrim, and shortly mm-hmm. after or right before Skyrim came out, Red Dead Redemption also came out. So Skyrim is dragons, Red Dead Redemption was, you know, Old West, open world game, etc. Red Dead Redemption 2 is the next iteration. We still don't have a Skyrim 2. And, you know, these are the types of games I like. I haven't played either of the Red Dead games, but it was just fascinating watching the video and like this big pileup where people would ride their horses through. And as they tried to ride through, they would just burst into flames. And it's just freaky.
Well, it shows that when you create virtual worlds, weird things can happen. And just imagine, Michael, what might happen in a world full of mixed reality where you're walking around and seeing things happen that aren't really happening, but kind of are, because that's the bug and the glitch in the system. So yeah. We'll leave you with that thought, because coding is inherently human and glitches happen. So noodle on that. Well, I guess that's where we're gonna have to leave it for
now. We're
gonna have
to leave it there.
Hope you enjoyed the show. We've missed you guys. We're excited to be back again, and much, much more obviously to come. So have a great rest of your weekend and week, and come find us again here on gamesatwork.biz. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.